Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. My name is Jessie Lowry and I am the Director of Conservation and Research here at the zoo. We are so excited today. We have a very special guest. One of Blank Park Zoo's field partners is right here at the zoo, and we're going to hear more about her wonderful project, Conservation Fusion, helping to save lemurs and tortoises by uplifting local communities in remote areas of Madagascar in just a moment. I always like to start off the show by setting the stage and talking about the role of a modern zoo in saving animals in the wild. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. But what I like to call it is a window to the wild, a place where we can invite the community and school groups and families and people of all ages to come see a glimpse of the beauty that nature has to offer, to look into the eyes of our rhino and see the amazing agility of our sea lions and seals and North American river otters, and get that sense of awe that we all get when we see these amazing creatures. But it's our job as an AZA-accredited zoo to turn that sense of awe into a real conservation action, something that's actually going to make a difference to wildlife populations both here in Iowa and across the planet. And that is our mission at the zoo, is to inspire conservation actions, because we believe that everybody has the power every single day to make an impact on the earth, and it's just up to us to decide if that impact is going to be positive or negative. And I can't take credit for that. That's actually a chopped up Jane Goodall quote, but one of my favorites. And so Blank Park Zoo works to save animals in many ways by being as sustainable as we possibly can, by getting those messages out to the community. Of course, we breed these endangered animals as an insurance policy against what's happening in the wild to hedge against extinction. We've had some pretty awesome babies lately, including Kamara, our baby Eastern Black Rhino, of which there's only 800 Eastern Black Rhinos left in the entire world, and that is those under human care as well as in the wild. But when you think about what the power of a zoo can do to really protect these wildlife and wild places, supporting field organizations is the meat and potatoes of conservation work. And that is the financial and in-kind support of those heroes that are out on the front lines in the range countries of the animals that we care so much about. And so that's why we invited Susie Lewis here today. She is the founder and director of Conservation Fusion and a very dear friend of mine as well. And what I always say about Conservation Fusion is that they are the epitome of the holistic view of conservation. And what the holistic view means to us is that they take and consider these organizations take in consideration the health and welfare of individual animals, the health of animal populations, the health of the local environment, and the needs and aspirations of the local people. And putting all of those things together is what we think makes a sustainable effort in the wild. And Susie, congratulations on the success of your project, Conservation Fusion, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much. I'm so excited to be here. It's like the excitement's equal. And the one thing that I was just thinking about on my way here to Blank Park Zoo is like, what I love about Blank Park Zoo, it makes me so happy to be here. They're so welcoming. It's such a win-win partnership. We're really working towards the same mission and vision. And when I think about Blank Park Zoo, I think about a little zoo making a big impact. And I'm just sometimes in awe at the many, many incredible ways that Blank Park Zoo does conservation right here in Iowa and also on a global scale. And I love that. And just to touch a little bit on what you talked about, one thing that we always promote in our programs is that One Health philosophy. And it's a big deal now in planetary health. Like, we're not just talking about the health of people or the health of animals, but we're talking about the overall health of our planet and the future. And that includes, diseases and things that are detrimental to human and wildlife populations. And so what we're doing at Conservation Fusion is that looking at the big picture and looking at how we can create this balance between people, animals, and the environment. And I think a wonderful example is some of the partnerships that we've built with Blank Park Zoo and other, tertiary partners such as the community college here, the DMAC students, and their professor who partnered up with us creating some educational games that were connecting the wildlife right here in Iowa in our own backyard with the wildlife in Madagascar and making connections, local and global connections. And we were able to share those games with teachers and students and eco clubs in Madagascar. They're in use right now, and they went straight from the classroom into the field. And I think that's such a meaningful connection. And it's not like we're just creating these things and shipping them off to Africa. I mean, it's an intimate connection between these folks that were communities that we have developed relationships with over the past decade in Madagascar, and connecting them with folks that we've met here, right here in Iowa, and that have a connection with Blank Park Zoo. And I think that's really a powerful and wonderful example of that One Health philosophy.
The students at DMAC and at Waukee Apex High School were so excited to support you, and they worked really hard on those games, and those were educational games about both the biodiversity in Madagascar and Iowa, just like you said. And there is something that everybody can do to save wildlife, even if you are in Iowa and there's no rainforests around, there's no coral reefs around. There's tons of things for us to do. Let's back up for just a moment and tell us a little bit about the mission and where you work in Madagascar, and what is it like, what's the environment like there, and tell us about the people.
Absolutely. Well, it brings me great joy to share with you a little bit about the island of Madagascar. It's the world's fourth largest island, about the size of the state of Texas and as long as California. And there are more than 28 million people that live on the island of Madagascar, and there's about a 3% growth rate. So that's why it's so important to consider that human factor. What I love about Madagascar is the many diverse ecosystems there. So, you know, sometimes when we think about these amazing places like Madagascar, it sounds so unique and remote, and I feel like we just get into our minds a rainforest. And of course, there are rainforests in Madagascar, but there's also littoral forests. So we work in the eastern rainforest at a place called Kinjavatu. We also work at the very tip top of the island in a village called Ndavakwera, where it's the last of the littoral forest. There's many caves there with bats and lemurs there. The climate's very warm there. There are a lot of streams in the forest there. And the other site we work at is Lavavulu, and it is a completely different ecosystem. It's the dry, spiny forest, so we have those incredible baobabs, which are sometimes referred to as the upside-down trees because their trunks are humongous. They could be the size of an entire room. Mm-hmm. And that's because they store water, because the area in southwest Madagascar sometimes won't receive any rainfall for up to 3 to 5 years. So there's
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's this dry spiny forest. The animals and plants that are there it's a forest, but they're all cactus, and it's the spiny forest because they all have these needles on them, but lemurs are able to jump through and land on these spiny cactuses without being injured. And each one of these lemurs, which there are 112 different species of, has their own little niche. So they're not necessarily competing for the same habitat or the same food sources. And the people at each one of those three sites. We talked about, what are the people in Madagascar like? Well, the island is a developing country. I always say they're a baby country that just gained their independence from France in 1960. And unfortunately, because of that huge population, 28 million, they more than 95% of all Madagascar's original forests have been destroyed. And so people, as they are part of the challenges for conservation and part of this destruction of the ecosystem, also have to be an integral part of the solutions. And so, you know, we really incorporate their ideas, their culture. The culture of the local people at each one of those sites is very different. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, our conservation messages, our approach to the One Health philosophy looks a little bit different mm-hmm. at each one of those sites that we work at.
So what are the main driving forces behind all of that deforestation?
Mainly poverty. Mm-hmm. So the average income in Madagascar has just been raised up to less than $2 a day. And so many, many of the people, about 95% of all the people that live in Madagascar are subsistence farmers, which means they're just barely growing enough food to maybe feed their family for the year. There's no excess and, you know, they're just living off of the land. So they depend upon this less than 10% of the original forest that's left for all their basic needs, for water, for shelter, for food, for medicines. All of these resources come from the remaining forest that still exist.
Sounds like a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. And we know that poverty is one of the main drivers. And research shows that no matter, you know, what the conflict is or what the two different sides are saying about a certain conflict, that and no matter where you live, everybody's just trying their best to eke out a living for their family. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really important thing, you know, an aspect of your project, that we just love the engagement with the local people. Mm-hmm. Let's dive a little bit deeper into what do you guys do on the ground for conservation fusion to help uplift the local people, and how does that affect the wildlife?
Well, that's a great question. And at the heart of everything we do is education. And so we really try to be experts in education because we feel like by educating, we're empowering people and giving them the tools to find their own solutions and to not to give them a hand out, but a hand up. And education is a way that we can do that. And I think a wonderful example is a big project that we've been working on this year is the Dream School. And that takes us back to the dry spiny forest in Lavavulu. The community came to us in 2011 and said it really is our dream for our children and grandchildren to have an education. And this village is very special. It's one of the last strongholds of the critically endangered radiated tortoises. They really are on the brink of extinction due to many factors, such as the breakdown of the tribal cultures in the area that once protected these tortoises, and also a huge factor is the illegal pet trade.
Why are these tortoises wanted for pets?
Well, they're critically endangered species, as they're listed on the IUCN Red Data List. And, you know, I have a hard time answering that question. Mm-hmm. I don't exactly know the drive, but, you know, sometimes it's like we always long for what we can't have.
And something that's rare.
It's illegal to have these tortoises as pets, but there's a huge demand for them. And so with this extreme poverty, these folks are willing to harvest these tortoises from the mm-hmm. wild in order to probably get a small amount of money mm-hmm. For them. But to them, with that less than $2 a day as an income, it can look like a lot to them. And then they're, so it's kind of a little bit of exploiting of the local mm-hmm. people, of the treasures their country possesses. And because of a bit of a lack of education, like they sometimes don't even realize that they have this really gold mine right there in their own backyard. And so, you know, that's what we try to do with Conservation Fusion is like creating knowledge that leads to a compassion and empathy and ultimately to action that saves endangered species in the wild.
So give us some examples of some of these impacts that you have seen or some of these solutions that are working for the local people.
Yes, great. Well, like I said, education plays a big role. So I'll give you a couple of examples. So in the eastern rainforest, we are working with many partners, and one of the projects that we work on is talking to people about the tangible benefits of conservation. So we're letting them know when all the lemurs are gone, so they may act as seed dispersers. So do when they're taken out of the forest equation, so are the medicines and lumbers and clean water and holding back the soil from erosion. Those are eliminated as well, and that affects their daily life. So over the last decade, these communities have come to appreciate that by protecting these endangered lemurs, endangered species, they're also protecting their own future and their own health. Mm. And so with a healthier ecosystem, they have more access to local resources, more access to clean water, which equals less trips to the doctor's office for them, and mm-hmm. less deaths, and they're able to stay in school longer. So we see that education really plays a role. An impact is we had a student in our class one time, and so we've been doing this for 10 years. So imagine that this young man was maybe 8 years old when he started in our education programs about water and compost making and school gardens and the tangible benefits of conservation. And 10 years later, he's 18 years old, which is really an adult in Madagascar. And, you know, we saw several examples of these adults in the community coming back and actually being conservation heroes and advocates and, you know, taking action into their own hands, like going back to their parents and saying, please don't clear the land using this mm-hmm. slash and burn agriculture. You know, there's other ways we can make healthy compost. We can plant trees. We can protect the lemurs. It brings tourists to our area. So we're seeing those long-term impacts.
That's amazing. And it is a long-term impact. But in the span of less than a decade, you can see those individuals. I mean, we always talk about, well, let's really, you know, get these ideas and these messages to the kids. And you're seeing it in action. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And we see it here at the zoo as well. You know, we have a lot of little kids who have been in our summer safari classes come back and they join zoo crew, and then they end up working at admissions when they're in high school and so on. Mm-hmm. And then they want to come and be a zookeeper or work in the conservation department. I mean, it's just amazing to see those impacts. Mm-hmm. Can you talk for just a moment about the rocket stoves? I think that is such an interesting solution.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So in all the areas that we work at in Madagascar, it's very rural. And so there's not access to electricity or running water or, you know, gas to turn on your stove or electricity to turn on your stove to cook. So traditionally, folks cook on a 3-stone fire. And so that causes a great deal of smoke that's inhaled, and it's really unhealthy to have all that smoke in your lungs. And it also uses a lot of fuel wood that has to be collected from the forest by cutting down trees. And so these rocket stoves are a fuel-efficient alternative, and it's been a real success. We know that from the research done measuring the amount of fuel wood that's used in the stoves, that it reduces the amount of wood that's used for cooking by 50%.
It's amazing.
So they have to use less than half of the fuel wood, and that also frees up a lot of time. So maybe young girls or young boys can stay in school longer than spending their afternoons collecting fuel wood, so they can have a better education. And, you know, the women who do most of the cooking have more time freed up to pursue other alternative incomes, or maybe can spend more time with their children. And
so everybody wins.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. everybody mm-hmm. wins. Mm-hmm. That's what we love about your project. Mm-hmm. So can you speak a little bit about the Madagascar Biodiversity Partnership?
Yes.
And their tree planting especially?
Yeah, I would love to. So the Madagascar Biodiversity Partnership, I'll just say MBP for short, it is a Malagasy NGO that was launched by my husband, Dr. Ed Lewis, who is the Director of Conservation Genetics at the Omaha Zoo and a veterinarian. So they're working on the research component, and they could see, hey, we are looking at all these different lemur populations. They've named more than 24 new species of lemurs in Madagascar, which is crazy. But they also saw, as we did, like, it's about long-term sustainability. And at one point, the carrying capacity of these forests to sustain these lemur populations is at a standstill. So not these lemurs need room to roam. And so it's not only about protecting that less than 10% that's left, but also expanding the forest. And their reforestation program, the foundation of it is the lemurs. The trees are planted from the poop of the lemurs. Mm-hmm. There's more than 100 different types of seeds that come from the lemur feces. They have established more than 17 of these tree nurseries where they grow these seedlings. It provides income for more than 189 people in the local community. It's more than 80% of the local community in this eastern rainforest is employed by the program, and they are actively planting trees at a production level. So they're planting around 17,000 seedlings per week. And to date, they've planted more than 2.6 million trees.
Wow.
And in a way, like, it just seems like, okay, 2.6 million. But the way they do it is that they have teams that go out and dig the holes one day. And then they have another team, and they have different mixes of compost and sand and Malagasy clay based upon, like, what season of the year it is. So during rainy season, they use less sand in the soil mixture. And it's all down to the science of it to really maximize the survivability of these seedlings. And it's just incredible to visit Madagascar time and again, and to see that these were once a barren hillside to seedlings, to now it's like a greenhouse there. So now there are places that you can go back to where you can't see anymore, because it's really has turned back into a forest. And we see birds returning to the areas, tenrecs, snakes, even mouse lemurs, and other lemurs are returning to these areas that were once cleared land.
And of course, tree plantings and forests are so important for the biodiversity of, you know, and the health of the entire planet, and combating the climate crisis. And so we're feeling the benefits even here in Iowa of the work of both Conservation Fusion and MPP. And so Madagascar Biodiversity Partnership. I think I got those switched around.
Yep.
And so we're just so thankful for all the work that you're doing. We've got just about 5 minutes. Let's dive deeper into the efforts to raise money for the Dream School. Mm-hmm. And tell us about the events that you're having in Omaha and how people can find out more.
Great. Yes. So we built our first Dream School in 2015, and we started out with 70 students, and we now have 175 students that now come from neighboring villages and walk to the Dream School, and we have seven trained teachers. And last year in August, for the very first time ever, we had 7 students from the school qualify for and pass the national exam. So we're seeing the benefits of the education program. Students from the school have, based upon like the conservation lessons, have helped rescue endangered tortoises from poachers. Wow. We've had so many wonderful successes. We have a scholarship program now. Once the children graduate from the Dream School, which is a primary school, we help them further their education in secondary school. And so we have big events coming up in Omaha. The first one is the Brew for Two. We're calling the second Dream School Dream School 2.0. And that will be at Thunderhead Brewing in Omaha. And you can find those events on our Facebook page. And
so the first one's July 12th,
which is a Friday. Mm-hmm. It's really family friendly. We'll have lemur games, all kinds of really wonderful raffle prizes, and a chance to learn more about conservation fusion. And our second event is going to be on a Thursday night in mm-hmm. right in downtown Omaha at the Diamond Room. And it's going to be our Shine Gala. Every year we kind of try to hone in on one theme, and we always choose the theme together with our teachers association in Kinjavatu. And so this year our theme for the celebrating a decade of conservation education in Madagascar is shine. And the Malagasy word for shine is mamiritra. So,
beautiful.
Yeah, our fall education programs will be celebrated with our annual conservation festival, Mamiritra Orama, and that'll be in November and December. And then, so this will be our Shine Gala on Thursday, August 1st, and you can find information about that event. You can buy tickets online at eventbrite.com. And if you can't make it, we have an online fundraiser set up. Our ultimate goal for building a school for all these students is just $44,000. Sounds like a lot, but it has a huge impact, and we just believe so strongly with our incredible partners like Blank Park Zoo. We're just confident that we know we can do it. We've already raised so far around $18,000, and we have a plan with the local community. They're really pitching in the process, and we have a construction manager on site. So we're really excited about Dream School 2.0 and the local and global impacts that the school can have.
We're so excited to see this school be built. We're so blessed to be part of this campaign and this project. And we're just really lucky to be partnering with such great projects over in Madagascar. Can you let us know what your website is one more time?
Yes. You can find us at conservationfusion.org. We're on Facebook and Instagram.
Wonderful. Susie, thank you so much for being here today and for all your work saving animals in the wild.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's all the time that we have for today on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. Please go to our website and our Facebook page to find out more about Conservation Fusion, as well as all of the other conservation programs that we have here. And don't forget that you can be a part of Saving Animals in the Wild just by visiting Blank Park Zoo, because we give a portion of every single dollar we make to save animals in the wild. We will see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.